Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
That justice system ultimately ignored all of those bodies and all of the families.
The stories they don't want told.
I was one of many people that were victims who was used.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Holding the powerful to account.
The culture of secrecy needs to be broken.
World of Secrets, the Global Investigations podcast from the BBC. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm Luke Jones, and welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC Earth Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. This time, we hear from people around the world talking about the virus Mpox. It's a virus that causes headaches, fever, and a blistering rash all over the body. In some cases, it can be fatal. And as concerns grow in parts of Africa about the spread of a new strain of the disease, we'll hear from survivors and doctors on some of the cultural challenges in getting people to hospital.
This man is an elderly man that started developing symptoms but felt his symptoms were not due to any pathogen but due to a spiritual attack, and it just resolved that he had to go to a church to get deliverance.
Since the start of the year, there have been more than 1,200 cases of Mpox, or monkeypox, in parts of Central and West Africa. The milder version is now circulating in other parts of the world, but the much stronger, possibly deadlier strain, called Clade 1B, is on the rise. Recently, Thailand confirmed its first case of the new aggressive strain, the first case of its kind in Asia, and the second outside Africa. A few weeks ago, the World Health Organization announced that Mpox constituted a public health emergency of international concern, after an increasing number of cases were reported in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, and many other East African countries. Here's a message we received from a woman who contracted the disease in DRC.
My name is Madua. I knew I was infected when things started appearing on my body. I started taking treatment earlier in vain, before being brought here. I don't recall encountering anybody. I ate meat, but I don't know if I got it from there. I was wandering with it, since treatment in hospitals was not helping me much, until the wife of my uncle brought me here. She told me to see specialists who arrived to treat it. I spent 3 months and a week. With the grace of God, I followed treatment and got healed by the grace of God.
Mpox is a disease caused by infection with a virus. This virus is part of the same family of viruses that causes smallpox. First discovered in monkeys in the 1950s, the first reported human case of Mpox was discovered in the DRC in the 1970s. It's also known as a zoonotic disease, which means it can be spread between animals and people. The recent, more virulent strain, Clade 1B, can be spread through close physical contact with another person or simply by coughs and sneezes. This recent outbreak is most prevalent in East Africa, but there have been a few reported cases in Asia and Europe. We wanted to hear the experiences of survivors, so I spoke to two people who contracted and recovered from the milder strain. They are Ayo, not his real name, he's a student in Nigeria and was infected with monkeypox earlier this year, and Haroon, who's a sexual health worker in London in the UK.
In May 2022, the first cases of Mpox outbreak in 2020 were seen in the UK, and I started to get sick at the beginning of June. It started with very high fever, going up to 43 degrees Celsius, big muscle pains, body ache. So I thought that it was maybe COVID or another viral infection like flu. Then I had a couple of pimples appearing on my body, especially the one on my face, in like 3-4 days into the symptoms. And it started to grow. But I tried to call the health services. However, back then, it was very early in the outbreak. Nobody knew about Mpox. So they thought that it was another viral infection. I was misdiagnosed 4 times. One time they sent an ambulance and just gave me the ibuprofen, to be honest. And then at the end of second week, I was still having very high fever and body pain. But then my throat was shut completely. So I wasn't able to eat or drink or swallow anymore.
That must have been really terrifying.
Very much, yeah. And then they took me to the hospital, and these are the first symptoms I ever had.
And it was it there at the hospital that they actually diagnosed you properly?
Yes. 3 days into the hospital, I got my diagnosis because testing wasn't quick and rapid. It was still new. They just kept me isolated without basically doing anything, just keeping me asleep and giving me heavy painkillers. And then 3rd day, I got the diagnosis and they sent me to another hospital, Royal Free London, which is infectious diseases hospital here. And then they put me on treatment. And I was really in a very difficult state, to be honest, with lots of pain, not being able to eat or drink, being fed by tubes. It was just a terrible time, yeah.
That sounds awful. What did you think when they told you it was Mpox? I mean, had you heard of Mpox?
I'm an activist, sexual health activist. I heard about it, but I didn't know in great details. The diagnosis gave me a sign of relief because until that point, it was an unknown and I thought that I was dying. Nobody knew what it was, and I was getting worse and worse every day. I remember looking at a bottle of water and crying because I wasn't able to drink. They changed my hospital, and they said that there's a treatment available for that, wasn't trialed on human beings. I said, yes, at that point, whatever it is, I can be a guinea pig. Just put me on it, and which it worked.
Ayo, what about you? You're in Nigeria. When did you first start to feel unwell?
It happened during May. I started having some a bit fever. I was thinking it was regular malaria. The headache was not able to handle because I noticed that it was more severe than I used to experience it before. I had to just keep myself indoors because I stay alone here. I'm a student. So I stayed alone and like bear the pain and regular treatment, but it didn't work out. So I went to the pharmacy to prescribe different drugs for me. I noticed I had some rashes. Rashes kept on increasing. The chemist here told me it was a chicken pox. I usually know chicken pox, you experience it once in a lifetime. So I was like, okay, I've never had chicken pox before. Maybe it's my first time. So I just in the calamine lotion, rub it around. But it wasn't working because the rashes keep on increasing and it started itching me and make me very restless, very, very painful rash. And it was having a very strong pox, small, bigger than chicken pox. So the pharmacist said that this is not chicken pox. So the government hospital was on strike, yeah, so we have to go to a private hospital. Private hospital run some diagnosis on me and found that I had monkeypox. And most of the nurses were afraid and were not responding to me quickly. I was kept there for 24 hours without any immediate effect because most of the nurses didn't know how to tackle that also. So I had to be referred to a government hospital in Abuja, the teaching hospital, University Teaching Hospital of Abuja. They diagnosed me, put me on special treatment, isolation for about more than 2 weeks. From there, I started having some a bit relief. My body became stronger because I was having fever, dizzy, couldn't able to stand. I was on the bed. It was a very crazy experience, very crazy experience. I didn't have to talk to my friends. I was being given food from afar, having that safe kind of fear also because I've never experienced something like this in my area before.
And especially one of those which people might be worried about catching, and so they're staying away from you. It must be quite lonely.
Yeah, I was quite lonely in that period because my family were worried. They couldn't let my mom see me. Most of them were there to like see if I'm really taken care of well. But most doctors in the hospital did a very good work also. 24/7 attention and the rest. And I was all alone in that isolation centre.
You were ill back in May, but now we're in a situation where there are lots of cases in Central Africa in particular, and of this new strain as well, Clade 1B, which is a more lethal strain of the virus that I think that either of you two had. It's causing lots of deaths. It's spreading quite quickly. People are trying to get vaccines to that part of the world and treatments there quickly. What have you thought seeing all that news play out, knowing that, you know, you've been through something like that?
I was first of all shocked it could spread to that extent because right there I had it and most people feel maybe I'll want to like go around and make contact with people deliberately, but I kept myself indoors. Even after getting discharged, I was like isolated myself 1 week to avoid any issue of it spreading more and more because it's going to affect people I like and my loved ones, my friends. And I know that if it becomes out, like it's very difficult for some people to have the knowledge to treat it at that point in time because it's not something that is well exposed in Nigeria, yeah.
Mpox has been around since 1958, so it has been a problem in Africa and in far countries. for so long. And in 2022, the Western world just met this condition with this virus. And as someone living with HIV and working as an HIV activist, we know that viruses adapt, they change, they become much stronger if you don't prevent them, if you don't take actions towards them. And there has been a vaccination for Mpox for years. And in 2022, there was a crisis about that because some big countries stockpiled the vaccine. And if we could be human enough to share this vaccine with Africa and these countries in struggle right now or has been struggling, we could stop this new outbreak in 2024. And this makes me angry. It is the same with HIV response. We don't learn our lessons from other conditions. We don't apply it when it comes to sexual health, especially public health. We only think that we are safe, but it will come and find us.
My advice is government should help citizens to increase the public awareness. They should exercise their COVID-19 protocols first at the meantime. You should properly focus on the aspect of public transport, physical touches and the rest. So avoid the quick spread of the virus. To maintain self-isolation if you notice any reaction on your body. In my case, I really experienced a lot of financial downfall that period because I couldn't be able to pay my hospital bills no more. I spent more than 200,000-300,000 in different hospitals. I had to borrow money from a lot of people, friends, family members. You also need a very strong finance. So it wasn't easy for me. Even till now, I haven't been able to pay up some people I had money from.
One of my colleagues the other day had a good word for it where they said it's not just an epidemic. They said it's an infodemic or something like that. Because not that many people really knew about Mpox or how to stop it transmitting or what to do if you get it.
The reason for that is when something is sexually transmitted, it's immediately being labeled or some communities are being pointed and the rest of the public groups think that they are very safe from that condition. The 2022 outbreak was made to the, you know, gay, bisexual, man having sex with men groups. And then we saw that actually women and children are contracting Mpox as well. Viruses don't listen sex, gender, or nation, or anything. So we think that we are safe from it, and something is sexually transmitted, we immediately point the gay community. But this is wrong, and people should learn something that, again, if we didn't learn it from COVID, we should learn it from this, that viruses don't listen specific sexes or genders or sexual orientation or anything. Everyone is at risk. The other appalling point is, we say that 95% of people are having Mpox mild. That is also very confusing for people. However, 5% are getting very severe, and we don't know which groups or who may have this condition very severe. These are the things that we don't know. We close our eyes. We think that we are safe from it. But I completely agree with what you said. We didn't learn our lessons in that. We don't have access to the right resources, or the campaigns are not easily understandable or open to public. That's also another problem. They don't speak the public language, easily understandable language to spread the news, correct information about these conditions. So it's a problem.
Haroon in the UK and Ayo in Nigeria, which became the first African country to receive vaccines after donations from the United States and Europe last week. This week, the Democratic Republic of Congo also received its first batch of Mpox vaccines, which health authorities hope will help curb the current outbreak there. I'm Luke Jones, and you're listening to BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service.
He's celebrated for things so much beyond his wrestling. The idea of being kind, compassionate, and helping others.
Mystery surrounds the death of a legendary Iranian sports star.
The state was taken aback by the breadth of segments of society that believed he had been killed by the state.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Legend of Takhti.
He was not a political figure. He just wanted to help his people.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
We heard a message earlier from a woman in DRC, a country which has recorded more than 18,000 suspected cases of Mpox and over 600 deaths so far this year. It's a rising challenge for health professionals in Africa, so we have brought together three doctors to hear their experiences. Dr. Yves Katawala is an epidemiologist and works in Budjala in the northern part of DRC, where there have been over 1,000 reported cases since the beginning of this year and a spike since the end of June. Dr. Agnese Camelli is from Italy. She's an expert in infectious and tropical diseases, working in Goma in East DRC for Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF Belgium. And Dimi Ogoina is another infectious disease specialist at the Niger Delta Teaching Hospital in Nigeria. He's been working on Mpox since 2017, when the first case in Nigeria was identified at his hospital.
I think we faced several challenges regarding the care and public health response to Mpox in Nigeria. Over time, I think there has been some improvement in what we are doing. When we started in 2017, for instance, we did not have the capacity to make a laboratory diagnosis of Mpox in country, that's in Nigeria. And that capacity has been built over time, and now we have the ability to do that. The challenge now is that Mpox diagnosis is centralized in the Federal Capital Territory, that's Abuja. And so what that means is that samples have to be sent from the various states to the Federal Capital Territory for confirmatory diagnosis. Now, usually turnaround time can be delayed, and there can also be logistic challenges. And what that means is that we have delay in confirmation of cases. And that raises anxiety, fear, uncertainty amongst both the clinicians caring for the cases and the patients. Also affects how you respond to a case. The other significant challenge is perception of disease. In the African setting and in Nigeria, sometimes people don't attribute disease to, for instance, an infectious pathogen. I have situations where we had a suspected Mpox case refused to come to the hospital because the person believed that it was a spiritual attack.
Just to clarify, there are people who think that the symptoms that they've got from Mpox, they think it's because of some spiritual reason, so they don't want to necessarily engage with you, a medic, to try and sort it out.
Exactly. So they end up in spiritual houses and elsewhere. They can actually be very frustrating. I remember talking to this patient on several occasions and giving this man, he's an elderly man that is a contact to a case who had started developing symptoms but felt his symptoms were not due to any pathogen but due to a spiritual attack. And he just resolved that he had to go to a church to get deliverance. And even after repeated awareness, enlightenment, requesting that he comes to the hospital, he blatantly refuse to do that.
Does anyone else have this issue? Agnese?
Yes, I think that this is like a problem in all African countries. As in Nigeria, I think that also people from DRC have this type of approach. In the context of Goma, indeed, the difference is that we are at the beginning of the epidemics and we are in like a setting of humanitarian crisis with the war and the IDP camp, the internally displaced person camps. This is why for us, the main challenge now is to like avoid shifting all the resources to Mpox and forgetting the population's other needs. They fear malaria, cholera, violence, famine more than Mpox. Then the challenge is to continue addressing all these problems and fighting against the outbreak. Because what people often forget is that if we fail to control this outbreak, all other health services will be deeply affected. Then children vaccination, malaria prevention, care for malnutrition, women's health, security are more urgent for the population and is still difficult to explain that we need to work on both crises, the epidemic one and the chronic one. They are still traumatized by the past Ebola outbreaks, and their main worry is being isolated, stigmatized, more than the consequence of the disease. This is why we experience fear and lack of access to the health post. They are worried about the consequence of isolation from the community, from the family.
It's not easy to come in a community and tell them that from now you must not go to your farm. For now, you must not eat this animal. Another perception in the community is lack of a disease linked to the lack of hygiene. Some people think that monkeypox linked to the lack of hygiene. And another perception is that monkeypox is a curse. So that we are working very hard in communication to try to change this perception in the community. When we came here, people were going also in the church. That means that they are thinking that it's also spiritually.
If they genuinely believe that what they need is spiritual help rather than medical help, how do you go about convincing them otherwise?
I think it's a whole of a society approach. Ultimately, most times when we're doing a public awareness program, we bring on board the spiritual leaders as part of the community engagement. Because in Africa, in Nigeria, people value a spiritual angle to things. And as much as possible, you will need to enable the participation of their stakeholders in the spiritual angle so that they are involved in explaining to them why some of these illnesses due to pathogenic microorganisms and the additional role of medicine in the care of patients. And that's very important. And that's what we have been doing. Some have been convinced when we have shown them examples. And sometimes when they are spoken to by their spiritual leaders who have better understanding and appreciation of the problem, they get to change their minds.
Is one of the problems, Dimi, not just that people may think certain things or have certain misconceptions, but that they also might not trust medical professionals?
Trust has always been an issue in the public health system. And that's because people have not been, over time, very accountable and also they have not been trustworthy in the way they expend public resources. There have been issues of repeated corruption in the African setting. So sometimes in situations like this, we always have issues of trust. People always perceive that the public health system is a distance from them and perhaps not easily accessible, both financially and geographically. Not everybody is covered by health insurance, and there's a lot of out-of-pocket expenditure. It's always easier for people to go to a spiritualist or a non-formal health setting to get care. But the formal setting, there are a lot of bureaucracy. Unfortunately, there's also issues of accountability and corruption and the like. Repeatedly, there have been failures that have been observed by the general population. So because of that, there's a trust deficit in the public health system. And that's part of what is contributing to some of these behaviors. Otherwise, it's also sociocultural background of most of the population mixed with issues of low awareness and education. Educational level is also very important because when you have a substantial number of the general population not well educated or literacy level being very low, they have a tendency to pick up some of these wrong perceptions. And this will affect how they interpret disease and how they respond to public health messaging.
The fact is that when we came here with a global treatment that MSF is providing here and free care, I think that's changing slowly the perception of the disease because they are seeing people coming in the hospital and going back with good recovery. So that's when people saw them, they are trusting in the medicine that they are providing in the hospital.
I can confirm what is telling because we are in a position as an NGO where the health service are free of charge. And it's true that people really trust us. I think that also in the setting of GOMA, MSF is here since a while. Then it's really a trust of the population towards us. And they know that they can find a good quality of health services free of charge. And this helps a lot. But I absolutely agree that, for example, if during the weekend we are not in the health post, the number of consultations drop. It's true that there is this mistrust towards the public health system. As an NGO, we are here now, but not forever. And what we are trying to do is really to work side by side with the Minister of Health to strengthen their capability to respond and to make clear for the population that we are in support of the Minister of Health because it can help for these outbreaks, but also for the next outbreaks, because unfortunately, this is really a geographical context that is really prone to epidemics. And we have to think also in the future, not just in the present.
Doctors Agnese Kameli and Eve Katawala in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Dr. Dimi Ogoina in Nigeria on the challenges, both now and ahead for health professionals trying to contain the spread of a potentially serious disease across the globe. I'm Luke Jones, and you've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
He's celebrated for things so much beyond his wrestling. The idea of being kind, compassionate, and helping others.
Mystery surrounds the death of a legendary Iranian sports star.
The state was taken aback by the breadth of segments of society that believed he had been killed by the state.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service presents Legend of Takhti.
He was not a political figure. He just wanted to help his people.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.